reflect the opinions of the staff or management of Visionary Related Entertainment.
I was drawn to a place in the sun.
All right, it's 7:06, Monday morning, August the 26th, and that means it's time for Mauitopia with your host, Ori Kopelman. Good morning, Ori.
Good morning, Gary. All righty. Let me first read the definition of Mauitopia. Mauitopia will be an ideal utopian society of the future, a first-of-its-kind place in the world on the scale of over 100,000 people, where thanks to technology, all of us have our survival needs met of food, clothing, and shelter, while pursuing our individual self-actualization. A place where we'd find true happiness by each contributing our unique gifts to the community. A place where we can all coexist in peace and harmony with no crime and where we can all help each other grow and succeed. Mauitopia's free market economics will be based on regulated capitalism and make the island a real paradise, Maui truly no ka'oi. In Mauitopia, we all win as we serve the rest of the world as a model of the society of the future. Now, to create Mauitopia, one of the things that we need to learn to do better, at least for myself, is how to manage and maximize my own time. The information age has created an incredible amount of information, data, and communication. The internet is a good example. I mean, the other day, I set my goals. I have weekly goals. And I started, I said, okay, I need to clear off 80 emails, go through them. And those are legitimate emails because I have two junk mail filters that clear out hundreds of emails per day, so I don't have to look at those. But I'm talking about I had 60 emails that I thought were legitimate that I had to go through. By the time I got to them later that day, I had 260 emails that I had to go through. And again, some of this is thanks to my good friends who forward me emails. They say, hey, you have to take a look at this. And I'm grateful for them. In fact, it's funny because a few years ago, my mother and I, because I used to get lots of emails forwarded from my mother, came to an agreement, which she has pretty much stuck to, that she would only forward me one email per day, something that I really got to take a look at. And like I said, she's been very good about that, and the one email she does forward me tends to be something that's really valuable that I learn from or get entertained by. My mother loves jokes and humor. Speaking of which, I heard a good joke.
We have Dreaming Bear on the line. Oh. Whenever you're ready.
Hi, Dreaming Bear.
Aloha. How's it going, Ori?
Good. How are you doing this morning?
I'm just so grateful to be a part of Mauitopia and loving and enjoying being on this glorious island we share.
Wonderful. And we're here to talk about maximizing our time. And I was just sharing that, I don't know for you, but I feel like I'm constantly struggling with the feeling of being overwhelmed. There is just too much stuff to do. And how do you ever get through this?
Well, for me, creativity is the best escape from the world of overwhelm. You know, when I think about how to best spend my time, the whole power of being creative, that act that sort of mimics the creative process of the universe is what, for me, suspends time, takes me into a place, a realm where I really have to be on call every moment. I'm more of a recluse, a being who spends most of his time in silence and away from things for that very reason. Although I had a previous life as a college professor where I was inundated and overwhelmed by the myriad aspects of life, but I made a choice a while back to leave all of that behind, and I have to say that traveling that road less traveled has made all the difference, truly.
Hmm. Yeah, is there any way, though, to find, I mean, I hear what you're saying, and it's obviously powerful to escape and just get away from things, whether it's for weeks or years or permanently, But is there a way to balance it, to find a life where one is able to both kind of be in the middle of everything and at the same time find peace and not feel constantly overwhelmed?
Well, yeah, that's exactly what I'm talking about as well. I don't subscribe to removing oneself from the game at all. By saying that I'm a silent creature, I mean that I'm still extremely involved in social media, extremely involved in, you know, running a non-profit organization and being actually really, really deeply involved with the world, but simultaneously understanding that there is a balance, as you speak of, and that balance has to do with allowing oneself ample amount of time to contemplate, to be a great thinker. I mean, think about it. We've lost our great thinkers, Ori. We've lost our Einsteins, our Whitmans, our Thoreaus, because we've raised generations who have literally not given themselves the proper time that one needs to cultivate themselves from within. That intra-personal communication that comes from communicating with oneself on a deep, profound level. And I think that that balance is something that's not only possible, but I think when we live here in Mauitopia, it's not a pipe dream. It's something that we have at our fingertips in the form of Maui's nature.
Yeah, it's very close. It feels like we can almost reach it and touch it.
And then simultaneously, we can be so involved in the world. You know, we're a hub, we're a hot spot for the world. We can be in the world and then at any moment in time remove ourselves from it and be immersed 100% in nature. And I think that that is the key. That's the balance. That one word, nature, is really the answer that we're looking for when it comes to creating balance in our lives.
Lucky we live Hawaii.
Indeed.
We have such an amazing nature here.
Most people don't get the chance to take real advantage of it, but even if it's a matter of just closing one's eyes next to a beach and being silent within 5, 6, 7, 10 minutes a day, giving yourself permission to do that, it will make a world of difference in the amount of balance one can feel, the amount of harmony one can feel, and not just nature, but when I say creativity, I mean music, art, poetry, dance, anything that really draws out of you that sense of timelessness, because that's our big issue now, right? This law of complexity says that we're pitifying in our everyday lives, this overwhelm of information is rapidifying. And by the year 2016, they said that we'll be having an experience where every half second, the sum total knowledge of humanity will be doubling every half second. That means more information than has ever existed in the world will exist every half second by the year 2016. That means the biological function of this human animal is going to necessitate an evolutionary imperative. We're going to have to evolve somehow so that we can deal with this overwhelm of information capacity.
So I guess we're getting good practice for that right now.
Yeah, exactly.
So instead of having to deal with 200 emails, we'll probably have to deal with 2,000 emails. So.
Exactly.
I was about to tell a joke when a few minutes ago when we got your call.
That's it.
Because on top of dealing with the overwhelm, we also have to deal with aging. So this old lady got stopped by the police for speeding. And the policeman said, what's going on? She said, well, I had to hurry to get where I was going before I forgot where I was going.
sort of sums it up, doesn't it?
Yes. I don't know about for you, but for me, I'm 51 years old, and it just seems to be harder to, even though I'm dealing with a lot more information, just harder to remember things.
Memory is the mother of all muses. That's the ancient Greek philosophy behind memory, and I believe it. I really believe that it's the muscle that we Americans mostly have neglected. Fortunately, I chose at a very young age to use my memory and to exercise it daily. There's not a day that goes by that I'm not trying to incorporate something new into my portfolio of ideas, you know, from the world, just grabbing the best, most beautiful things that people have said or that have thought, and then somehow incorporating that into my own personal pantheon of philosophical approaches to the world. And then in that memory, in that memorization of what is most beautiful, creating an amalgamation for myself, a new stew, if you will, of thought from which to draw upon. And I think that memory, once employed, even though, as you say, as we get older, it becomes more of a challenge, we begin to outsource our memory, as it were. We outsource it to our cell phones. We outsource it to our computers. We outsource it to the digital world. But when that digital world, or if that digital world somehow falls apart, then we find that we have relegated our true power, our true muse, to the junk pile, you know, to the digital age, which has not a guarantee to continue. The human animal is capable of so much more, memory-wise. But I think that it's happening, this decay that we speak of, because of the combination of an overflow of information and an underdevelopment of the psyche.
Yeah, so what are some of the techniques when you, for memorization, when you try, like, for example, the classical thing is misplacing something in my own apartment, whether it's a piece of paper or my car keys. You know, it's like, so I've developed techniques, obviously, for making sure the car keys are always in the same place. And if I put them in a different place, I will have a hard time finding them. Same with a piece of paper, although I have so many different piles, so many different to-do stacks that I just get lost. And, again, it just adds to my feeling of being overwhelmed.
It's the absent-minded professor syndrome, where one can be, you know, extremely intelligent in every other way, but then when it comes to these very simple things, we can get lost and we can forget. I myself have been a party to that, and keys are notorious creatures. They like to hide from us. And, you know, I don't know if we'll ever solve the dilemma of where we put our keys, but I know that for sure there are techniques for exercising the muscle of the memory, the mind, and giving oneself permission to, you know, access that is what I think makes all the difference.
You know, keys are one thing, and then there's the cell phone. Do you know that in the United States, on average, a cell phone is lost every 30 seconds? So that's something I really make sure that I know exactly where my cell phone and my keys are at all times.
Well, at least the cell phone rings, and you might get a cell phone call. But with the keys, there's a little bit of a bigger challenge. But yeah, I hear you. I mean,
as long as you don't silence your cell phone, because
cell phones, wallet, keys, these things they're like cousins to each other. They like to play hide and seek with us.
Right, but keeping track of them is so important.
I think the bigger dilemma, though, is why can't we remember the Declaration of Independence?
Oh.
Why can't we remember the fundamental truths of life that have been so, you know, foundational in building this beautiful place we call home? Why can't we remember the things that are most dear? And I think that those are the things that make all the difference in the end. There are actually vitamins that can improve memory. I'm not sure if you're aware of, there's this beautiful root of a plant called the spider lily, and there's a form of chemical that comes out of that called, I can't remember the exact pronunciation of the name. Let me see if I can think about it. It's called choline. I'm not sure if you've heard of acetylcholine.
No.
But it's actually what's given to Alzheimer's patients to improve their memory. Well, you can actually order them. They're called Dream Vitamins, and they're dreamamins.com is the website. But they have actual pills that improve memory. They're the same medicines that they give people for Alzheimer's, but they're actually just an over-the-counter herbal remedy for memory loss.
Well, actually, I just started trying this protein that comes from what makes jellyfish glow. And scientists have discovered at the University of Wisconsin that it helps aid in memory loss. So it's a free trial, and I just started taking them like a couple of days ago just to see if that helps.
Well, I recommend that anything that helps try it. But for me, what's really worked, and I'm a poet, so it's imperative for me to remember 48 hours of information at any moment. I can sum it up and speak for 48 hours. That's always been my goal. And the best things I've come across are this substance called choline and this other one called galantamine. Both are from the red spider lily extract, and both produce this really powerful effect of giving one memory control, and not only of everyday life, but it's originally designed to help people remember their dreams.
Hmm.
I mean, talk about memory loss. We spend one third of our life
sleeping
in this dream state,
yeah,
and we've forgotten 99% of that. That's 33 years if you live to be 100.
Mm-hmm.
So think about it. Where are we brain farting away this one third of our life? I think that there's so much more to be known than just where our keys are, where our fundamentals are. This is a whole other part of our life. This is a whole other life, as it were, that's being forgotten. The moment we wake up, we're flushing the toilet of our mind and just sucking away all the information that comes to us in that state where we're able to access every possible version of existence in the nexus called sleep. And I think that, you know, scientists show that there's more brain activity by far when one is dreaming than when one is even awake. Well, the question is, would we, and I have spent a lifetime cultivating this ability to remember my dreams, and I think that that carries over into everyday life. Memory is the mother of all muses, and if we can access and harness that power, not only is our everyday life more available to us, but our dream life, that 33 years that we would otherwise have forgotten, is also available to us.
Yeah, you know, for about 20 years now, I've been keeping a notebook right next to my bed so that when I wake up, I immediately write my dream down. And if I don't, it's pretty much gone. I forget it, and I cannot remember it until later, even later in the day.
I think, Ori, that's the best practice a human being can do, you know, because you learn more about yourself that way.
That's right.
You learn more about the map of your own mind. You learn more about what you're capable of doing in this life, because if dreams are anything, they're sort of a dress rehearsal for life, a way of us saying, well, if it's possible in the dream world, then it's possible in the waking world.
Although I've also benefited from a number of books about how to interpret dreams, just because there are a variety of types of dreams, some of which are junk. Like, I used to pay attention to them, and it turns out they're really just kind of processing what happened that day. House cleaning, exactly.
Yeah, there's four levels of dreaming. And the first is house cleaning, real briefly. The second one is what's called the mechanical space of dreaming, where we're actually working on physical ideas or problems with work or what it might be. And then the third level is called psychological, where we're interacting with people through our dream world and working out psychological issues. And then the last and most profound state of dreaming is what's called pretemporal, or if you want to put it more familiar, it's called the prophetic dream. And this is a state in which we're able to actually access the future in our dream space, and what we dream comes true. And that's the most profound state. But once one recognizes the language of dreams, you know, they can determine what kind of dream they're having, then they can also enact the biggest gift of all, which is lucidity in dreaming, to be as awake as we are right now, Ori, and as aware as you and I are right now, but in a dream state. And to do that on a regular basis, that's the goal. I think that that's the ultimate gift that memory gives us, is the ability to do that.
Yeah, I've never been able to do that. I've learned about it, but what was that guy's name? Stephen LaBerge, who taught about lucid dreaming. And I learned about it, but again, it's not something I've ever been able to do.
When we get off today, I'll send you over. I teach lucid dreaming as a matter of course, and I'd love to share some of the information and techniques that I've developed over the years that help me. Maybe they'll help you as well. They're pretty simple, really easy thing.
Thank you so much. Yeah, I'll try. I'll give it a try.
Well, with a name like Dreaming Bear, you better guess. I better know something about dreams.
Other than about bears.
Exactly.
Let's see. The other thing, I guess, I've been employing for like 20 years of my career, 25 years, for time management. I was fortunate to be exposed many years ago to the Stephen Covey 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, and that included a system of time management. And one of the things they talk about is making sure to identify all of your roles in life, and for each of your roles, what are your goals on a daily, weekly, and monthly and yearly basis. And while it's a little bit left-brained and to some degree can stifle some amount of creativity, it has actually been tremendously valuable for me in helping me achieve some of my real-world goals, if you will, not necessarily the creative ones, but just the mechanics of what really has to get done in order to fulfill some of my longer-term goals. And like I said, it can be, a lot of people call it left-brained, but it has been very useful and valuable to me. And I still employ that to this day. And to that extent, when Thursday and Friday come around, I feel so much more relaxed and relieved because I've already accomplished lots of my goals that I've had for the week.
I think that that's a necessary way of existing in this world, especially because if you want to, you know, in any way, shape, or form, access the totality of what we're capable of as individuals. And let's just be honest, we're capable of so much more. I mean, think about Einstein. Think about this man who was a clerk working a full-time job and simultaneously writing the theory of relativity in his
right.
spare time. I mean, where has the human potential gone since then? Come on, we are so much more capable than even Einstein was. And I see a future, Ori, where Einstein becomes the lowest common denominator, and we use people like him and Beethoven and Mozart and other geniuses as a platform to jump beyond into the world where we are headed, if we can give ourselves permission to do what you're doing, which is to apply oneself in as many ways as possible. And so long as it doesn't feel overwhelming, and so long as it doesn't feel like it's sucking the life out of us, but rather instead like it's giving us permission to do what we're born to do, I think that that's the best approach that one can take, to be driven to an extent, to say to oneself, I'm here for a brief time in the body. What will I do with this time? How will I cultivate myself? How can I grow into the most beautiful possible version of myself? And I think that that takes discipline.
Yeah, and you're exactly right. What's amazing about this particular time in history is that, at least what I have in terms of the vision for Mauitopia, is where each of us is driven, as you just said, to become all that they can be and give to humanity their particular gift. So, as you said, it's like there will end up being 155,000 Einsteins all living on the same island, but, of course, each one contributing in their own way. I mean, we won't all be inventing this, the theory of relativity.
And although we all have the ability to do that, but not all of us have the determination or the discipline to make that happen. I applaud your ability to apply yourself in the week, and then to give yourself that permission in the weekend to say, time to let go, time to sit back and give myself what I deserve for a well-maintained discipline, you know, which is the luxury of doing nothing. That's also something that's a lost art. We get so caught up in doing that we can't just be,
right.
Or we get so caught up in being that we forget to do, and the balance is really the key. How to find, and for me the balance is the difference between day and night. So during the day, I apply myself rigorously in the act of relaxing. I let the sunshine come into my body. I listen to nature. I listen to the birds. And not everyone has that ability or that option, because not everyone's calling in life affords them that ability, but it can just as well happen at night for other people. I choose the day because I'm a poet, and that's my opportunity. And the night, I spend, the moment the clock strikes 10 p.m., from 10 until 4 in the morning, that's my work day. That's when I actually go into work mode. I start to write. I start to paint. I start to memorize other languages. I ask myself, how can I cultivate myself on every level, intellectually, mentally, physically, spiritually? And then I give myself permission from 10 at night till 4 in the morning to cultivate that. And why that time? Because most people are asleep at that time,
mm-hmm.
and the constellations overhead, Orion is usually overhead at that time. Believe it or not, what we're doing has a big impact upon the universe, and what the universe is doing has a big impact upon us. So for me, the night is when I can most clearly hear when I could most clearly access those forms. But since I was a very young man, I made it a point. You know, I got two master's degrees and a PhD, not by sitting on my butt, but by going out there and applying myself and really, really, really asking the universe, what can you teach me? And that question, I said to every tree I meet, I said to every person I meet, I said to every creature I meet, inside of myself, I ask, what can you teach me? And then I practice the true art of listening. And I think, Lori, that's the art that's been lost in our generation, the art of listening.
Yeah, and actually we are at the halfway point in our program, and I brought in your CD and wanted to play your Enlightenment CD. And Gary has that ready to play, and I'm wondering which track, Dream Bear, shall we play? Do you know?
Well, you know, it's up to you. Those tracks are quite long, so you might have to play just a little bit. But
a minute or two as a break.
Yeah, I think any of the even number tracks, 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, those are all messages from the ancients. So what I've done with the Enlightenment album is really try to give voice to those ancients.
Right? Well, let's start with number 2 then.
Okay.
And Gary is getting that ready. And okay, here we go.
You are everything. Earth, water, fire, air, and space. The subtle world, the nature of all. You, self of all beings, from the creator, Brahma, to the blade of grass, all is your body, visible and invisible, divided by space and time. We are the Brahma, the immense being, the first shape, who sprang from the lotus of your navel to create the worlds. We, the gods, worship you in ourselves. We, as the kings and queens of heaven, as the sun, the Lord of Tears, we as the Indweller, the Lord of the Wind, we the Offering, we are all of your shapes, while you are ourselves. We, the Eternal Truth, who dwell in bliss, obtain the meta-fruit of our deeds, realized as this world's shapes of joy. Free from contracts, we enter and move within all things. Dweller in the lotus of the heart, you are the self of time, which at the end of ages infallibly devours all beings. Universal Self, we are that elemental shape from which beasts and humans have sprung. Gods and living beings, ether and the elements, sound and all the qualities. I, Krishna, say, be fearless and pure.
Dream Bear, are you still there?
I'm here.
That was incredible. I was mesmerized. I hope nobody was driving.
You know, honestly, on that track, is the sound you're hearing in the background is a famous Hawaiian nose flute player named Anthony Natividad.
Mm.
And he's actually the person that the album is dedicated to. He passed away last year.
Right, I remember from the party.
That was a powerful collaboration, you know, to be able to bring to life these ancient narratives in a modern language.
Yeah, and can you tell everybody what the instrument you're playing?
Well, in that particular track, what you're hearing is actually a combination of bells, Tibetan singing bowls, as well as the Hawaiian nose flute. And my particular instrument, however, is a very special instrument called the hung, H-A-N-G, but pronounced H-U-N-G, hung. And it's made in Bern, Switzerland in the year 2000. If you don't want to hear that or see that, I've also emailed a song over to Gary last night. I'm not sure if he got it or not, but that's the instrument that I play. Maybe later on in the program I can recite it a little bit to that. But if not, then people can check it out at my website, dreamingbear.net. And there's a whole section that just called the hung, and they can click on that and find out more about that instrument. Very rare, sort of an ancient future sound, if you will.
Yeah, it's an amazing sound, actually. I loved it. Gary's actually going to check in his email to see if he got the track that you emailed him. Meanwhile, I guess we can keep talking about... I love from your the track we heard, The Lord of Tears. That was very nice.
I think that tears are, for me, they're the common denominator. They're the one thing that every human being can understand. Laughter and tears, for me, are the exact same thing. Only a hair's breadth of difference between them.
I was just going to say, yeah. Sometimes I laugh so hard it makes me cry, right?
Yeah, or cry so hard you begin to laugh.
Exactly. Amazing emotions that we can experience, huh?
In the end, it's what makes life worth living in the end.
That's
how you know you're alive.
That's right. What did you say? I can't remember what you said. The thing that you could create the moments, high moments in life. How do you call them?
Yeah, what did you say?
You had a term for this as far as moments of life. Like, I'm sorry, I forgot.
Our memories.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Oh, I just remembered something that a little different than what we were just talking about. But I brought this up earlier in the program, is the spirit of the law versus the letter of the law. Because I said that even though I am not in agreement with all of our laws, but I think that in order to have a functioning society, we have to stick by the laws that we have currently. And I wanted to bring an example that, unfortunately or fortunately, I was taught by a large sheriff in the state of Georgia when my friend and I were teenagers. And we were driving through, and we were stopped, given a speeding ticket, and we clarified with him, or tried to clarify, when you see the speed limit sign off in the distance, does the speed limit apply at that minute, at that second, actually, when you see it? And he said, no, that's not how it works. It's only when you get to the sign does the speed limit actually begin to apply.
I see.
And to me, that's a good example between the letter of the law and the spirit of the law. Because the spirit of the law was, hey, we were trying to abide by the speed limit. But from his point of view, the law's point of view, it's we were not following the law.
I see. That's the critical thinking aspect of what we humans get to endure in society. And I love, we also have a great tradition of civil disobedience for laws that are unjust. And that's what Thoreau represented, of course. But when it comes to...
And Martin Luther King.
What was that?
I said, and Martin Luther King.
And Martin Luther King, Jr., and a myriad of other great thinkers who've just had the ability to say, well, hey, not every law is a good law. And let's just take the good ones and the ones that are obscene or absurd. Let's disobey them. And not to say that we should be lawless by any stretch of the imagination, but I agree with you, or I think that we need to follow the rules that are in place, but only to the extent at which they're not unjust rules. Because we are, after all, free beings in the end. It's only society that places these imaginary rules of money, politics, and religion. You know, churchianity and the other myriad forms of thinking. I think that once we get out of society, once we immerse ourselves in nature, we see that there are no rules, there are no laws except one, and that's the law of respect. And it's something that everything in nature observes. every creature in nature observes the law of respect. They respect each other's space. They respect the landscape. They respect themselves and life itself. And I think that, you know, humans have gotten way too litigious in our way of being, that we've made a law for everything that there is to do under the sun. It's against the law to spit. It's against the law to say the wrong thing. It's against the law to even think the wrong things in some places. But it's our duty. It's incumbent upon us as original thinkers to obey the laws that are right and just, and to civilly disobey the ones that are not right and just. Not to say that we should put ourselves in the way of being a felon or anything like that, but
no,
we should have the wherewithal within ourselves to make the right choices at any given time, regardless of what the law says.
Right, and I'm very fortunate that we live in this day and age, because we have granted women, for example, the right to vote, so that's not an issue we have to express civil disobedience over. I'm also grateful for the fact, like, there was a civil rights movement in the 1960s where, I don't know if you saw the movie Butler recently, but it's really good, and blacks used to have to sit in the back of the bus. I mean, there were incredible injustices that these days are no longer there. And fortunately here on Maui, and particularly in Mauitopia, it really doesn't matter what color of skin, what sex you are. What we want to know about is, what gift are you here to bring the rest of humanity? And we're not going to judge ourselves or anybody.
I think our bigger challenge, or I mean, we've had a civil rights movement in favor of minorities, but how about the concept of social justice for more than just us? I'm talking about a civility rights movement on behalf of all sentient beings. So, yes, we have women's rights, although that's only been in the last 60 years. Yes, we have civil rights for minorities, but that's only been within the last 60 years. But now, what about the civility rights of every other sentient being? What about the rights of other animals, the rights of other plants? And I know that sounds airy-fairy. I'm an educated being, don't get me wrong. But at the same time, I think that our biggest challenge is just the civility that goes in being considerate, being thoughtful. Those kinds of rights are the ones that are being overlooked now. You know, if we're going to evolve as a species, let's evolve to the point where we take into consideration that we're not the only people, the only entities with intelligence and emotion and thought on this planet, and that it's incumbent upon us as caretakers of this world to not only think about our rights, but the rights of every creature that exists.
Right, and I think actually the Hawaiians have been wonderful in terms of teaching us to treat everything with respect. And whenever I say aloha, I think about that.
The Hawaiians have a long-standing tradition of what I call interspecies equanimity. They really do see each tree, each creature, each cloud as a part of our global ohana, you know, as an extended earth family, as it were. And I think that all indigenous people have that understanding because of their immersion in the natural world.
Let's open up the phone lines in case anybody does want to call. It's, what is the number again?
It is 242-7800.
Yeah, we'd love to hear somebody else's comments out there, particularly about how do you contend with being overwhelmed these days with the myriad of things or opportunities. Really, there are opportunities for doing things. There are so many different things. I mean, I have friends that call me before the weekend and say, hey, are you going to this or that? And the reality is there are just so many things, particularly here on Maui, that you can do on a weekend, parties and movies, different things that come out, and they're really good opportunities for ways to spend your time. So I'm wondering if there's people out there who have some advice in terms of how to live with not getting overwhelmed, but seeing them as opportunities, positive opportunities for how to spend your time.
It looks like we got a caller. Hello, caller, you're live on the air on 11:10 a.m. Mauitopia.
Oh,
guess it was the wrong number.
Huh. But, you know, while we're waiting for the next caller, I think that an important thing to mention here, Ori, is that somehow the situation has become that when we interact with other people, we end up small-talking ourselves into being small-minded. And what I would like to encourage every person within the sound of our voices today is to think about the ways of cultivating conversation so that when you meet another being, you're not just small-talking about the weather or about how one is doing, but that you take that occasion to realize that you're in contact with a whole other universe of experience, of ideas, of thought, and to cultivate by asking each other profound questions, by culling from one another, if you will, by gleaning from one another, the true genius that is inherent in each of us. So I always try to meet people on that level. And I've been notorious for stopping people in the middle of conversations and just saying, not smugly, but authentically, just saying, listen, I appreciate what you're saying, but can we raise the vibration of this conversation? Because I don't like to get involved too much in the mundanity of life. And I think that may be a shocking thing to many people. They kind of look at me like, who do you think you are? And I say, look, I just think I'm a being who wants to be met in a beautiful way. So, you know.
That's beautiful. It's wonderful. I used to go to something called Conversations That Matter.
Exactly.
And, you know, you gave a good example. Like, the weather is not something that really matters.
It's the default.
Unless there's a hurricane.
Yeah, right. Unless there's a tsunami. Thanks, Gary. I'm sorry?
I said that. Leave it to Gary to keep it practical.
Good. We need somebody like that.
Exactly.
Let's see. What do we want to talk about next? Dream Bear, do you have any further?
I have lots. You know, I'm just wanting to honor you and let you lead this conversation. But if I have anything to talk about next, it would be, let's fall in love with life again. Do you remember when we were kids and we couldn't bear the thought of the day ending? I remember just even yesterday I was having this very nostalgic feeling watching the sunset and listening to the birds and sitting next to the trees and just thinking to myself, wow, I remember not wanting the day to ever end as a young person because there was so much meaning, so much potency, so much beauty inherent in each day that the thought of it actually ending seemed almost mournful. And I think that we've got to get back to that place where we're so in love with life. You know, we've gotten to the point where we've worked ourselves to the bone, and what's there to show for a lifetime of sweat and blood and tears? At the end, it's all vapor.
Mm-hmm.
We've got to stop and listen and take a moment to just be present with existence itself, and not existence as an arbitrary, otherworldly abstract concept, but existence as us being the architects of that existence and us being the directors of this brief moment in time we've been given called the expanse of one thought. You know, Buddha said that life exists for only the duration of one thought, and after that thought is said to have ceased, the being is said to have ceased. So think of our entire life as one thought from beginning to end, and the question is, how will we spend that one thought?
Mm.
And my approach is to spend it with love. And in love, I mean a romantic asphyxiation to life itself, as if to say, I kiss the day, I embrace the afternoon, I make love to the night. And I know that sounds extreme.
Spoken like a true poet. Actually, Dr. Dream Bear, we have a call. Let's see if that's really there.
Hi, caller. You're live on the air on 1110 AM with Mauitopia.
Oh, hey, guys, this is Antonio calling.
Hi, Antonio.
You know, I was listening to the show this morning. You know, I have over 13 years of sobriety, and when I heard that break music, I had a flashback as if I was tripping on LSD or something, you know.
That's why I said I was hoping nobody was driving.
No, but, you know, last night on the television, we see this Miley Cyrus doing her thing on the Video Music Awards, and there's quite a bit of controversy of that in the social media right now, you know, and I don't know if she's on drugs or something, but it seemed like perhaps an intervention needed to be done. And, you know, regarding, I heard you talk about the woman's rights and the civil's rights and stuff, and I kind of think that things have gotten out of control with all this, you know, because there's so many cross cultures influencing other cultures that I think it's almost inappropriate. Like, here you have Miley Cyrus doing dances that are more towards the Negro culture, and I thought it was very inappropriate and stuff. So I just trip out when I see all this. And, you know, I was raised where a male courts and mates with a female, but now with women's rights, the women are turning around and having the males arrested for sexual harassment. You know, and I think this has gotten so out of control and deranged and demented that I find this all overwhelming in my world today.
You know, one of the good examples I've heard is that people used to think of America as being a melting pot of cultures. And
yeah.
I prefer the term that they've come up with, which is a salad bowl, that we all should keep our, and particularly in Mauitopia, the whole idea is for us to all keep our unique gifts and abilities to bring to the community, and we don't necessarily want to have it all melt into each other's energies or auras or beings. So
yeah, it's like when I see these Hawaiian guys, they're listening to rap music.
Yeah, that's
and
right.
I'm like, tourism is not going to want to come to Hawaii to see Hawaiians, you know, doing rap. You know, it's like,
right.
I feel it's detrimental to the Hawaiian culture for the Hawaiians to be listening to rap music. I mean, that's, I think it's really terrible. You know, but they do it. I'm not going to say nothing to them. But me personally, I'm sober enough to be conscious and see what's going on. And it's kind of like, oh, it's really tragic. And I want to just comment on what Dreaming Bear said. You know, yeah, the all the entities or the creatures of the planet need to be protected, especially the fish. You know, the mahi-mahi are being overfished, and the tuna are being overfished, it appears, you know. So I've actually currently been on a vegetarian diet, kind of, what do they call it, a fast or a... I forget the term for not eating meat, you know, to give the animals time to reproduce and stuff. Because,
vegan.
You know, well, no, it's not vegan. It's vegetarian. I'll do the dairy, but.
Oh, okay.
But at any rate, I just wanted to comment on the kind of those things where, what the show was touching on, this Miley Cyrus, you know, I hope she's all in good health and spirits, but God forbid she's involved in any illegal substances, because that would call for the intervention, you know. So.
All right, thanks, Antonio. We're running out of time here, so we're going to wrap things up with...
All righty, so if you have any final thoughts, Dreaming Bear...
I think that what the caller was touching on is important in the sense that part of this is a generational divide. The younger generation is hell-bent on expressing themselves in whatever way they deem necessary, and part of that's the rebellious streak that says, let's defy the generation before us. And, you know, I can't speak to that because I think that young people will do what young people are going to do, and whether or not they need an intervention, I'm not sure. But I do know that, you know, one thing is very important that he touched on, and that is the content that we put into our minds. You know, rap can be positive. There's a positive version of rap, but all too often that what we hear and what's given to us is this really lamestream version of hip-hop music that is so inundated with dead ideas and overwhelmingly, you know, aggressive ideas. And my thought is, I love to listen to Hawaiian music. I put on the traditional Hawaiian music, and I'll just listen for hours to hula music because there's something so profound in it. It touches a deep core. The concept here is, no matter what you're listening to, that it be something that uplifts you, something that adds to you, because whatever you put into the system is what's going to come out. So if you're putting crap in, you're going to get crap out. As far as protecting the sea life, yes, by all means. We are overfishing our oceans. We're not just overfishing them. We're turning our oceans into plastic. One-third of the ocean is now plastic. That's the new element in the ocean. And not only that, another big part of the ocean now, thanks to Fukushima, is radiation. I mean, what's going to happen with our oceans turned into these primordial soups of dead fish, you know, or even worse, desertification of the entire ocean landscape? They're saying now that two-thirds of the oceans are deserts. That's a huge that's a huge dilemma for us as a creature on this planet, because those are our cousins. Those are our extended family in those seas. That's where we came from. We originated in the ocean. Now we're land mammals. And, you know, evidence shows that dolphins were once land mammals, and whales were once land mammals who then went into the ocean. So
well,
our interrelationship with the ecosphere is so important.
We'll see if we end up living in the ocean.
Indeed.
Gary's giving me, we only have a couple minutes left in the show, and so I want to just thank everybody for listening to Creating Mauitopia, and I hope that you have benefited from this and have learned something about how to maximize the use of your time, because, again, we all have a unique gift that we're here to contribute to creating Mauitopia, and I want to encourage everybody to find that unique gift and have the courage to contribute it to the Maui community, which is the best community in the world. And I've been around, I've actually flown over 1 million miles looking for the best spot on Earth to live, and I chose Maui, or Maui chose me, and I believe that one of my purposes is to help create Mauitopia. Thank you so much, Dr. Dreaming Bear, for your time this morning.
I'm such an honor, Ori. Thank you for doing what you do. Let's create Mauitopia together. I'm so, so privileged to be a part of what you're creating here, brother. Thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome.
Hey, Dreaming Bear, stay on the line so I can talk to you after the show here real quick.
Sure.
Let's do the closing music.
In the sun, where the ocean and mountain and sky are one, it is part of a much higher plan, Maui land, where the upcountry flies to the sea, and the rainforest waterfall shouts melodies, under stars at night he touched my hand, Maui land. Maui man, feel the rain, Maui man. He's a boy with a surfboard, the right wave coming somewhere out there. Balancing, dancing, precision on the crest of a swell.
With your latest Al News headlines, I'm Jack Gist from the Visionary Real News Center. The Koikaika Maui baseball team claimed the Pacific Association Championship on Sunday in San Rafael, California, with a 6-1 victory over the San Rafael Pacifics. The Koi defeated the Vallejo Admirals 8-3 earlier in